The 465-5019.
Yeah, that's you.
That's the stream, yeah.
Okay. And then your line. Oh, that's the one stream? Oh, yeah, that's the one stream. You're the 6437.
Yep.
So is it another beautiful day in Juneau, Danae?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I'm sorry, my line was muted.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah, it's gorgeous here.
Nice. Same here.
Well, good.
We're dialed in, but I'm going to mute it right now.
Okay. I will be in the office for about 10 more minutes, and then I'm going to be headed over to the belts room. So anything after that, go ahead and contact Todd.
Okay. So he'll just replace you, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you
for all your help.
Yep, you're welcome. Bye. Bye.
Is there a reason for this majestic space between?
we're working with what we have.
It's all for you.
So.
Hi, I'm Matt Bergen.
Matt, Byron Malott.
Byron, nice to meet you.
Should pick up anything in this vicinity, okay? But you know, I have the mics on each end right here.
Now, this is all in this room, or do we have a?
I'm ready.
Hello, everybody. This is Lieutenant Governor Byron Malott. I call this public hearing to order. The purpose of the hearing is to invite testimony from members of the public regarding Citizen Initiative 17F-SH2, an act providing for the protection of wild salmon and fish and wildlife habitat, which is appearing on the ballot for the upcoming November 6, 2018 general election. This public hearing is required by law. Alaska Statute 1545195 requires the Lieutenant Governor to hold two or more public hearings concerning the initiative in each judicial district of the state at least 30 days before the Tuesday, November 6, 2018 elections. Only those attending in person today will be able to testify, but anyone may submit public comment on ballot measure one at any time through the online public notice posted at notice.alaska.gov/189769. notice.alaska.gov/189769. The handouts from this hearing are also available for viewing and download as part of this public notice. Written comment on the ballot measure on ballot measure one may also be mailed to Office of Lieutenant Governor, P.O. Box 110015, Juneau, Alaska 99811. Anyone unable to attend a hearing in person will be able to provide oral testimony during a statewide teleconference currently scheduled for October 13, 2018. Anyone wishing to testify in person today should sign up using the sign-in sheets, which I think you've all seen, and some have signed up already. There will be no Q&A as part of today's hearing, but representatives from the Departments of Fish and Game, Environmental Conservation, Transportation and Public Facilities, and the Department of Natural Resources will be reviewing the testimony and comment received for this initiative. The Department of Law will also be reviewing the testimony from a legal perspective. Each agency has contributed to a frequently asked questions document, and this FAQ may be updated as a result of comments received. The most current version of the FAQ will always be available through the online public notice for this hearing. The order for receiving testimony today shall be a statement of support from the sponsors of the initiative, a statement of opposition. We will then accept testimony from attendees in the order that they signed up to testify. Testimony will be limited to 2 minutes per person. The public hearing schedule, I'd like to state for this record. The first hearing was Friday, September 7th in Juneau. This hearing today in Kotzebue. There will be another hearing tomorrow in Nome, Tuesday, September 18th in Anchorage, Friday, September 21 in Sitka, Monday, September 24th in Fairbanks, Tuesday, September 25 in Bethel, Saturday, September 29th in Dillingham, and as I mentioned, a statewide teleconference session which will likely be broadcast from Juneau on October 13th. We will now begin the order for receiving testimony shall be, I've already done that, we will now begin accepting testimony. Do we have any initiative sponsors present to provide a statement of support?
Right here.
Mike
yeah.
Wood?
Yep.
From Talkeetna?
Yep. Chase, actually north of Talkeetna, but close enough.
I'm sorry, where?
Chase, it's north of Talkeetna. It's up the Susitna River off the road.
Community?
Yep.
Wow.
So I do this, and then I will have another opportunity to do my personal as well.
Of course.
Okay. I'd just like to begin by saying my heart goes out to what the town of Kotzebue is going through today with this missing girl. It's kind of a tough time for this testimony. Just in general, a lot of people are out in the country right now doing what they do. And I'm grateful to be here in this town, in this country that Inupiaq have been in forever. So anyhow, that said, I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today. So I'll just read this part and then I'll do my personal later. Mike Wood, I'm a ballot sponsor. Yes for Salmon ballot statement. All Alaskans have been given the gift of salmon passed down through the generations. Salmon and other related fisheries support a $2 billion annual economy, 32,500 fishing jobs, communities around the state, and ways of life for thousands of Alaskans. In addition, in many areas of the state, our tourism economy is driven by visitors coming to Alaska to fish, hunt, and view wildlife, supporting 43,000 jobs and adding $4.8 billion annually to the economy. It's our duty to protect the salmon and all they provide for our families, for our communities, and for all future generations of Alaskans. And that's why I am speaking in support of Ballot Measure 1. We are at a critical moment in the history of our state. Our salmon runs are mostly intact, but the climate and oceans are changing. Alaska is growing fast, and a new generation of mines, dams, and large projects are bearing down on our communities. Our outdated, ineffective law that is meant to protect salmon habitat will not protect us from the worst effects of mining and overdevelopment on salmon. Not when it's perfectly legal for foreign corporations to wipe out salmon spawning and rearing streams and leave a toxic mess there for Alaskans to clean up. We need real science-based standards that will truly balance our salmon fisheries with responsible growth and development. When Alaska became a state, the drafters of the Alaska Constitution even recognized the value of these resources and created directives to protect salmon and other renewable resources, specifically Article 8 of the Alaska Constitution. It reserves fish, wildlife, and water for the people of Alaska for common use. It directs the state to sustainably utilize, manage, and maintain our fisheries and other renewable resources, and directs the legislature to equally prioritize and balance the conservation of natural resources with the state's interest in the utilization and development of them. These constitutional directives serve as the foundation for Alaska's standard of care when managing our salmon resources. Alaska is the last place in the United States that still enjoys healthy and sustainable salmon fisheries. But we can't simply manage, harvest, and expect our salmon populations to remain strong. We need to also have strong habitat management in place, especially during times of low returns. In tough times, the single most important thing we can do is provide healthy habitat for the salmon to come back to. The problem is that Alaska's current fish habitat protection and permitting law is too general to truly balance the sustainable fisheries and responsible development. Under the current law, the commissioner shall issue a fish habitat permit unless the plans and specifications are insufficient for the proper protection of fish and game. However, there is no definition of what the proper protection of fish and game means. That means the current law does not provide the certainty or accountability in the system to ensure that the law will be applied consistently and without political influence. That's why ballot measure one is so important right now. Ballot Measure 1 offers a proactive solution to strengthen Alaska law and protect salmon streams as Alaska continues to grow. Ballot Measure 1 will establish clear and enforceable standards for development around salmon streams, requiring things like adequate water in streams, fish passage, and clean water that wild salmon need, while also requiring mining companies to pay for cleanup and long-term damages to salmon streams. It creates a two-track permitting system to ensure that projects that pose little threat to fish habitat get a minor permit and proceed quickly, but larger mining projects like Pebble Mine are on the major permit track to receive more scrutiny because they have the potential to damage Alaska's salmon fisheries. It ensures that Alaskans, for the first time, have a voice in the permitting process for major development projects that could harm salmon streams. It gives Fish and Game authority over all salmon streams in Alaska, and it creates a path for responsible development projects to move forward in a way that protects our wild salmon legacy. Alaska is the last place in the United States that still enjoys healthy and sustainable salmon fisheries. We can look to the lower 48 and we can see what irresponsible development has done to salmon. We have the opportunity to get it right in Alaska. My hope for our future is that we can learn from the past and choose a different path. Protecting our salmon runs for the future generations is about as Alaskan as it gets. I hope you will join us and vote yes on ballot measure one on November 6th. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wood. I should have mentioned that the 2 minutes allowance for testimony does not apply to the formal statement on behalf of the sponsors and the formal statement in opposition. I'd also like to mention that this hearing had originally been scheduled for to be held at the Northwest Arctic Borough offices, but because that is the headquarters for the search for 10-year-old Ashley, it was moved here to the school district boardroom, Northwest Arctic Borough School District, on very short notice, for which we are very thankful, and thank the administration of the school district for allowing us to have this hearing here today. And we also, as state officials, have our hearts go out to the community of Kotzebue, to the family, to those involved in the search. We extend our heartfelt wishes for their strength and the opportunity that their presence and their the conduct of the search will bring a positive and speedy result. In addition to the sponsor statement, the law requires a statement of opposition. Is there anyone present to provide a statement in opposition to the initiative at this time? Is that you, Greta? Okay. Greta Shirk, who represents the organization Stand for Alaska, is that correct?
Yes, correct. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Good afternoon, and I also want to acknowledge the missing young lady and the families and the volunteers in this community and the region who have come together during this this really difficult time, and sending lots of thoughts and prayers to the community and her parents. So thank you. Unukshalotak uvanga inyurak animarunga kikiktagrugmi ashin inyurukshunga katyagni. In Inupiaq, I just said my name is Greta Shirk. I was born here in Kotzebue and raised just east of here in Kayana. For the record, I'm the Senior Government Relations Coordinator for Tech Alaska Red Dog Mine, and Red Dog is a member of the Stand for Alaska Coalition Vote No on One. We participate in Stand for Alaska efforts because the measure threatens jobs, livelihoods, and the very existence of the mine. While this is my job, I chose to be here today because I was born and raised in this region where three generations of my family have made their livelihoods in the resource industry. If I count my great-grandfather, a European gold miner who settled in Kayana, where he remained the rest of his life, there are actually five generations of miners in my family. My family story is not much different, though, from that of other Alaskans. When I was a kid, my dad worked a rotational schedule working to construct the DeLong Mountain Transportation System, which is the haul road that connects the mine to the port site. After graduating high school, I began my career at Red Dog at the age of 18, working various laborer jobs at the mine, where I ultimately settled into the Human Resources Department, working on recruitment and education programs tailored to Nana shareholders. It was during those years at Red Dog that helped build my own capacity and work experience that led to other career opportunities with the state legislature, which further laid the foundation for my career path. At one time or another, each of my eight siblings have held a variety of positions at the mine, and now their kids, my nieces and nephews, make their living at the mine, providing for their young families. But Ballot Measure 1 presents significant threat to our ability to keep our jobs and continue to provide for our families. If passed, the new regulatory regime would eliminate Alaska's existing and effective fish habitat protections and unnecessarily replace them with ambiguous and untested regulations. This could potentially shut down current operations at Red Dog and would inhibit the ability to continue to develop this region's resources, thus limiting opportunities to the Red Dog workforce. Had this initiative been in place when Red Dog was undergoing the permitting process, we would not have gotten to the development stage of the mine. It is hard to imagine what the Northwest Arctic region would look like today without the opportunity of Red Dog, and it is impossible to ignore the individual opportunities that resource development has provided to thousands of people and families across Alaska. In addition to the impacts this ballot measure could have to Red Dog, I'm also very concerned how it would negatively impact the development of much-needed projects in Alaskan communities and our continued access to the land and water and all that it offers. As I said, my family has lived in the Kobuk River region for thousands of years, and we continue to depend on moose, caribou, fish, and berries for economic and spiritual reasons. Any threats to this way of life or this lifestyle that feeds our bodies and our souls, we adamantly oppose. I worry that ballot measure one would undermine our livelihoods and ability to continue to lead this lifestyle that we so cherish. Join us and vote no on ballot measure one on November 6th. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sir. Do we have a Ms. Hall choosing to testify? Listening? Pete?
Peter Calvadori, Lieutenant Governor. If I may, I will respectfully defer to the others in the room and maybe testify later.
Okay.
Thank you.
Karen Matthias, do you wish to testify? There's a Matt Bergen, but he has indicated that he also does not choose to testify. Is there anyone else who would like to testify at this time? We have no other sign-in sheet. So those of you who were waiting, you're certainly welcome to testify now. Otherwise, I will declare a recess, and we will wait to, for those of you who would wish to testify, we'll declare a recess for 15 minutes. Possibly others may come in that time. Otherwise, we'll reconvene and hopefully hear your testimony. Does that make sense? Okay, thank you. We're in recess for 15 minutes. I call this hearing back to order. And if Karen or Peter in any order would care to testify at this time, please do so.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Thank you also for your comments about the search. As the mother of an 8-year-old, my heart just goes out to Ashley's family, and I too and everybody wishes that this can be resolved quickly and positively for everybody. For the record, I'm Karen Mathias, and I'm the Executive Director of the Council of Alaska Producers and a member of the Stand for Alaska Vote No on One Coalition. Council of Alaska Producers is a statewide business association for the 5 large metal mines and some of the advanced projects in Alaska. I'm testifying today because the Council of Alaska Producers has 3 members, Teck, NANA, and Trilogy Metals, that have invested in mining exploration and production here in Northwest Alaska. Greta did a great job covering the impact of this ballot measure on communities and on individuals. I just wanted to add my voice about the importance of mining operations here. The Council of Alaska Producer member companies have invested hundreds of millions of dollars in Northwest Alaska. They've provided thousands of jobs over many decades. And if you think about Red Dog, it's been in production for 29 years, plus there was 20 years of exploration and development prior to production. During the time of production, it's meant tax dollars for local and state government to provide roads and schools and public safety. And I'm also very humbled by the fact, very aware of the fact that there are many people in this room who know far more than I do, about the positive impact of Red Dog on the region. I don't think that it does anyone any good to pit one industry against another. All jobs in Alaska have value. They help us pay for our homes and feed our families. And mining is an important part of Alaska's economy. The sponsor statement had some inaccuracies about mining, and 2 minutes just isn't enough time to do a rebuttal, although I'd be happy to stay afterwards and answer any questions about mining that anybody has. But I see every day that the operating mines show that mining can and is being done right in Alaska. They're operating 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, and to the very highest safety and environmental standards. So why add an unneeded layer of bureaucracy and new regulations when the existing process works? Ballot Measure 1 threatens the ability of our existing mines to continue, and it threatens opportunities for new projects. It threatens Alaska jobs when our economy is already suffering. Why would we do that to ourselves? This is why the Council of Alaska Producer opposes Ballot Measure 1 and why I will be voting no on 1 in November. Thank you.
Thank you. Peter, would you care to testify?
Continue to defer, Lieutenant Governor. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Wood, would you like to deliver your personal?
Sure. Mike Wood, Chase, Alaska. So I came to Alaska 30 years ago as a guide on Denali. And the first half of my life, that's what I did, was spend my life in the mountains. The last 15 years of it, I've spent as a builder, log builder, and fisherman in Cook Inlet. And I live on the Susitna River. I am only here today because 5 years ago, the state wanted to build a 750-foot dam on that river. And for all intents and purposes, it didn't make any sense. The process was infuriating to deal with. The public comment process was a joke. The science was turning out to be a sham, and there was no economic benefit to the entire state as a whole, in my personal view. I am now stuck between what is, I fish between the Suhide, what the mouth of the Susitna River, what would have been the Chewitna coal mine, and now what's intended to be, literally starting on the beach where I fish, to be the Donlin gas pipeline. I know these things are coming, and I fish among oil and gas wells out in the water, out right off where I fish all summer long. And
and I see things that could be done better. I also put a lot of faith in the fact that people, we can learn from the past. I've traveled a lot in this state, and I'm just a visitor here. I've traveled from Bettles to Kotzebue in winter once. I traveled from Nenana to Kotzebue in the winter one other year, and I've traveled through a lot of that country, and I just love it, and I've studied about it. I've learned about it, and I recall that there was this Inupiaq prophet, Nanilek, that had this vision that someday there will be a large community and another mine probably at the headwaters of the Kobuk. And I could be getting all this wrong. The point is we know it's coming. We know mines are coming and we need them. We especially need good batteries someday, and we need cell phones, we need flat screens. We're going to mine everything we can to make sure that we have that. I think what inspires me to be here today is looking at the past and having some vision of the future to make sure that as these things happen, we don't destroy an already thriving fishery or clean water that provides for a culture, for our economy, and just a way of life and a thriving industry. And so the ballot initiative is a rough tool for a job. I wish this happened in the legislature. But nonetheless, I'm proud of the fact that the people of this state, and I think this ballot initiative is for the people of this state that live in the woods, way remote, that have a chance to vote on this in November and have their voices heard. And that's why I'm here today, and I'm totally out of my element. But I appreciate the opportunity to speak and to have that side seen. So thank you.
Thank you. We have several who have signed up. Who choose not to speak, but we have Reggie Jewell from Kotzebue. Welcome, Reggie.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. My name is Reggie Jewell. I reside here in Kotzebue. And like most folks, I've done some things in this state. Certain legislature, and the only reason I bring that up at this time is during the time that I served in the legislature, we lost a very important tool, coastal zone management. But before that time, I also served on a NANA board when we made the decision to go ahead with the mine and find a partner to develop that resource. And and as a representative in the legislature, my district was all of the North Slope and this region here, part of the Northwest Arctic Borough and the North Slope Borough. When we lost the coastal zone management battle in the legislature, there was, I think, a lot of fear that caused people to make a decision not to use that tool anymore. Even in the private sector, NANA Regional Corporation uses a subsistence committee made up of people, hunters, providers, gatherers, from the two villages closest to the mine. and at times there were issues. But little known fact is that small group of people have the ability to shut down the mine if something goes awry, in their opinion, with regards to our renewable resources, which are the fish, the game, and the area that could be impacted by that operation. And once in its history, there was a time when there was a water issue and they threatened to shut that mine down and force the company to spend money to right the issue. And it's so a local committee made up of people locally in those two communities have the ability and the know-how to understand a wide variety of things, including economics as it relates to jobs, economics as it relates to, and take and put this all in a context of what are the issues being addressed, need to be addressed, and hold people's feet to the fire. And I bring that up kind of in the context of how we managed to lose coastal zone management as a tool. Now I believe, I can't remember if we're the only state, if we're not the only state, we're one of very few states that choose not to use the coastal zone management as a tool. And of utilizing the a public process for these kinds and other things. Now, it was not a perfect tool, believe me, I know that. But yet, it engaged people locally to do that. Now, so whether this initiative passes or not, and I'm not here coming on one side or the other, but to say this, and that is, I think that whether it's any future administration needs to take another look at coastal zone management and how we can bring that back to the state of Alaska to address some of these issues. It certainly, we developed the North Slope, we developed the Red Dog, and as much as people say they didn't like it, those big projects made it through that process with local people, and those businesses have thrived, even when it was at its worst. Now, can we make it better? Probably. So, and that would be my comment to this process. I couldn't help but in the district that I served, and for me personally, I tend to be a pro-development Democrat kind of person. But on the other side of that, development should not be afraid of involving and engaging local people in the processes that have allowed things that provide the coffers to the state considerable amounts of money, and sometimes that gets lacking. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Drill. That was exactly 2 minutes. Is there anyone?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I said that not to emphasize the amount of time that Reggie spoke. It wasn't very long at all, but as a former legislator, as a resident of this region, as an icon virtually, I thought was absolutely appropriate. So thank you, Reggie. Willie Hensley.
Oh, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I'm Willie Hensley. It's my traditional name. I was born a few feet from here, and I'm happy to address you formally for the first time since you've been Lieutenant Governor. And I just couldn't help but reminisce a little bit. I'm not speaking on behalf of any entity. I'm speaking for myself. But it doesn't take long for a lot of memories to come back when I come home, and how much change has taken place, not only here, but throughout Alaska in our lifetimes. And some of these decisions we've had to make have not been easy over the years, that affected ourselves and our people and the state. But I perfectly understand how people can feel very connected to the land and to what we do on the land and the kind of meaning it brings to lives, not only individual lives, but to families and communities. There are probably not many left now who who lived in sod houses as I did in my youth. They were actually warmer than the tar paper shack we had here in town. But I lived in three, up here by Little Noatak and up at Kanukpuk and then back down to Ikatuk. Life has changed so much. At that point in my life, in our family life, we didn't have a bed. We didn't have a chair. We didn't have any shelving other than blazo boxes. Didn't have a couch. It was a dirt floor. We slept on willows, on a katja, on a caribou skin. We had a great life if you had your health. It was a hard life. And we couldn't even begin to imagine the changes that were coming at that point in the late 50s and in the early 50s. But at that time, we had almost nothing to say about what was happening in the policy arena. We had nothing to say about what went on in the schools. Our people were coerced into congregating around the schools, even though we needed to be spread out. They were threatened with the jail if kids didn't go to school, to have the language and the culture beat out of them. And we had nothing to say about the healthcare system, what little there was. We had nothing to say about anything that came from the outside world. And so it's taken, a lifetime of effort by lots of people to try to get some say over how our lives are being affected. At the time, we had, of course, nothing to say about our own space, our own land. We had no piece of paper to say this is our territory that anybody would recognize. And so we had to fight like crazy just to preserve just over 2 million acres of 30 million, for our own people. The rest of it, the state and the federal government have now. And so it was not that we... And then we inherited a corporation that we didn't particularly ask for. It was a price we had to pay to get our land. And so it was by good fortune that we had a giant deposit of zinc and lead on the land that we had selected. It really was not that high on our list, actually, of selections. We had other interests, actually. But nevertheless, we ended up with it, and then we had to make a decision about what to do, whether or not our people wanted to develop or not develop, and we could have gone either way, depending on what our people said, because we had no ambitions to get into mining. But the reality was that things were changing. Somebody was talking about change. When you modernize, there's a price to pay, and at that time, many families had children in boarding schools that needed money. We're in the early stages of getting electricity. We needed money for that. If you wanted to be a commercial fisherman, you had to get a boat, a bigger boat, and a bigger, more stronger motor. It was the beginning of the snow machine era. People needed to buy snow machines. They needed money. And so we were beginning to feel the pressures of modernization. In the old days, fur was the revenue we got to keep us going every year, and flying down to Bristol Bay to work in the canneries. But our people made the decision to go for mining, protect the land, protect subsistence, but go ahead and find the best possible partner and protect the land, but go ahead and work with them. So that's, and we were unified in that, totally unified in that idea. And because people wanted the training and they wanted the jobs. And the fact that there was potential, huge potential monetary revenues, we had no idea what that might be. So jobs were really key. As it turns out, there were times when the mine probably should have shut down because the prices were so low. But they kept them open, and in time, zinc prices spiked, and there was a lot of money to be made. So out of that, we've essentially supported the entire 12-region Native community with over $1 billion of revenue from that mine under 7i, and half of that money going to the villages. It's provided a mechanism for them to sustain themselves as well as NANA. And consequently, our borough without mining is nothing. We fought hard to get the borough, very hard, because we needed some entity that could do region-wide planning and provide services region-wide. And so without revenue from mining, it's gone. Once the ore body runs out at Danana, that threatens the viability of the borough because we don't have very rich people. We don't have enough money to pay the property tax to provide the services and employees and whatnot. So I would say that, from my experience, the government agencies, they look very hard at every project. I mean, millions and millions of dollars are spent looking at the environment, looking at the water, look at the plants, look at the wildlife, looking at the cultural activities. And as Reggie mentioned, Red Dog was built when Coastal Zone was in full effect. And I believe in that. I believe that community should have a chance to raise their issues. And I oppose the fact that the regional corporations fought Coastal Zone, the implementation of Coastal Zone management, because I think it's a tool for communities. But in looking at the proposition, when I got back from Washington, D.C., and saw that there was a proposition back in 2008 that, in my mind, was going overboard as well with respect to potential new development, so I got involved, and, it was voted down. In my opinion, this is a similar concept. We love fish. Everybody loves fish, but there's absolutely no way in hell, that fish is going to pay the bills. In fact, if I'm right, I think we pay more money to manage fish than the state gets in fish. And so consequently, for this area, we have seen how it's possible to manage development in a way that protects our values, and that includes subsistence, and that includes the environment. And if the state and federal agencies do their job, we think that will continue. In fact, as everybody knows, Red Dog Creek was basically a dead stream because of heavy metal contamination, natural. And so for that reason, I oppose the passage of that initiative.
Thank you, Willie. Thank you, Mr. Hensley. Elizabeth Carvalho. We'll stand in recess until she's ready.
Oh. I am not that important, Lieutenant Governor. Thank you. Good to see you here in front of you. First, I want to thank you for taking the time to be here in Kotzebue, Lieutenant Governor, to hold a hearing on this important issue. Good afternoon. My name is Elizabeth Carvalho, for the record. I am from Kotzebue, Alaska, and serve as the Vice President of External Affairs for NANA Regional Corporation. I'm here to testify against ballot measure 1 because of the harm it will cause Northwest Alaska and the state of Alaska. Ballot measure 1 will create duplicative and costly regulations that impact current resource and community development projects without changing existing science-based habitat protections for all anadromous fish, including salmon, trout, and sheafish. NANA's mission is to enhance the quality of life for over 14,300 Inupiaq people, our shareholders. We do this by protecting subsistence, pursuing economic development opportunities, and working in partnership with communities and other regional entities to make infrastructures such as housing and evacuation roads and communities a reality. Investments like these provide NANA the opportunity to deliver dividends to shareholders, ensure that subsistence access is protected on our lands, and that we are contributing to a positive environment where the next generation of shareholder workforce can emerge. Subsistence continues to be the highest and most important use for NANA lands. When we look to develop our lands, it must be in concert with this priority. Existing laws and regulations evaluate impacts on fish habitat in a focused manner, rather than subjecting the entire state to broad and unnecessary regulatory burdens. They allow communities to ensure their needs are met in a tailored way. Ballot Measure 1 will sidestep this existing process that has worked for responsible development in our region. Current infrastructure in the region and for ensuring protection of our subsistence resources. For over 40 years, NANA, in partnership with TAP, has operated the Red Dog Mine with a strong environmental record and under the guidance of a subsistence committee. Ballot Measure 1 threatens existing and future operations at the Red Dog Mine and the primary taxpayer to the Northwest Arctic Borough. Red Dog Mine has provided over $155 million in payments in lieu of taxes to the borough to fund schools, public safety programs, and infrastructure. So through Section 7I of ANCSA, NANA has shared over $1 billion in earnings from the Red Dog Mine with other Alaska Native corporations throughout the state of Alaska. Ballot Measure 1 threatens current and future operations at the Red Dog Mine and in the Red Dog District. Communities face significant barriers to getting basic infrastructure or maintaining existing infrastructure. Ballot Measure 1 threatens community infrastructure projects like water and sewer, airports, roads, and potential harbors and ports. Ballot Measure 1 increases the barriers each community in our region already faces to getting infrastructure. It puts the expense of doing studies for any infrastructure on communities and other organizations that otherwise do not have these funds. This ballot measure was created and funded by people who do not live in Northwest Alaska or Alaska. They do not understand how existing regulations are working for our communities, nor do they understand the significant challenges our communities face to meet the needs of the people of our region. Salmon, sheafish, and trout are all very important to our way of life. So is ensuring that the next generation has access to healthy subsistence resources, good infrastructure, and economic opportunities. At NANA, we have seen how development can happen in a balanced way and in concert with protecting subsistence resources. If Ballot Measure 1 passes, NANA will not be able to achieve its mission to improve the quality of life of shareholders. I urge anyone to take a closer look at this measure and vote no. Thank you for your time, Lieutenant Governor Klainenbach.
Thank you, Liz, for your statement. Is there anyone else who would like to testify at this time? You signed up. If not, we are obliged by law to conduct this hearing until 3:30. So pending further testimony, we will stand in recess.
This is Scott Merriweather calling the hearing back to order. We haven't received any other testimony. I'd like to remind that anyone may submit public comment on ballot measure one at any time through the online public notice posted at notice.alaska.gov/189769. Thank you to all who testified today and to the Legislative Affairs Agency staff who are assisting in this process. This hearing on Citizen Initiative 17 FSH2 is now adjourned.